Hello, everybody. Happy Tuesday. Another episode of Tipsy Tuesday here on the Rockcast. A new fun thing that has happened with the podcast is we are now proudly partnered and powered by Onyx Hunt Maps. So just a big thanks to them for liking what we're doing and what we're putting out and deciding to hop on and help us do so. So with that, you'll be hearing about Onyx Maps more. We're going to try to include like as many tips and tricks through that map system that we can. I've been using it for quite a long time, and it just seems to be the system that I prefer to use, just user friendliness and reliability and things like that. So if you want to, you can go to Onyx Maps /hunt and use code ROCKCAST to get you 20% off. So go do that promo code if you are looking to get into Onyx. And yeah, we're going to have some fun things coming up with them as far as like giveaways and such. So yeah, just super, super thankful to have them on board. So diving into Tipsy Tuesday, it is May 25th. So we're going to wrap May up, talk about some, there's actually a lot of application deadlines coming up here the first part of June. So we're going to roll through those pretty quick here. But first off, Rockslide giveaway is still rolling. So that is going to be, if you go to rockslide.com, you look up in the tabs, there's going to be a a giveaway tab. Click on that, get you entered. You basically sign up for the Rockslide newsletter, follow all the Instagram pages of everybody involved, which is going to be Rockslide, Mesa Precision, Unknown Munitions, and Kafaru. The winner is going to be announced June 15th, so get on that. And latest episodes, I just had Scott Rakers with Eastman's on in this last episode last Saturday, or this last Saturday. Application strategies and changes, that's a really hot topic and that was a great episode. So go check that out. Eastman's also has Tag Hub, which was just reviewed on Rockslide. So that review is up. Check that out. Eastman's Tag Hub is basically like, it basically takes their MRS section that's in their magazines in the back and adds some more things in there and makes it searchable and filterable and things like that. Throws it all in one place online, so you don't have to keep 107 magazines to get all the states. So there's that. And Dione just reviewed a bunch of hunting knives called the Modern Hunting Knife Shootout. So that's a new article that's up. Go check that out. And on to hot news. Montana is mostly in all in the hot news this year or this week. So grizzlies are migrating eastward. So a 450-pound male grizzly bear was euthanized by the USDA after it killed a beef cow. Actually, it killed at least two of them in the Big Snowy Mountains south of Lewiston, which is way outside of the home range of the grizzlies in Montana. So they're moving, branching out, obviously. And the bear was reported the week before, I believe, on a trail camera that was on a cattle carcass. And then they caught the bear in a trap after it was determined that it had killed at least two cows. So that's interesting. The bear was 5 years old. And the article also said everything is expanding. Like, obviously, you know, it's just bears start getting, you know, kicked out of their areas by other boars or whatever. And then pretty soon they start spreading out. I mean, they got to go somewhere when there's a high number. So they're starting to travel. But the article through a wolf example in there, and there was a male wolf that traveled over 1,000 miles to California from Northeast Oregon. So they're just traveling little fools. And I mean, you can just kind of expect that, right? They're going to start traveling around. So also in Montana, there were two bills signed last month, Senate Bill 98 and Senate Bill 337, that argue the circumstances in which a grizzly bear can be killed. So I'm just basically going to read the article for you here. So Senate Bill 98 arguments that the circumstance in which a person can kill a grizzly bear in order to either protect a life or property. So further, anyone who kills a grizzly for these reasons has absolute defense against being charged with a crime, according to the Rocket Miner. This is straight out of or off the Go Hunt website in their news section. Supporters of the bill include ranchers across the Rocky Mountain front who have been very vocal about grizzly bears expanding further east. And those against the stipulation say that it goes against federal law and opens up permissions for ranchers to freely shoot bears in self-defense. Life and property there, or property being their cows. The bill also says that grizzlies have rebounded enough that they no longer warrant federal endangered species protection, which I am totally for. All right, next bill, Senate Bill 337, changes how grizzly bears are relocated should they be captured following a conflict. Now, if a bear is captured outside of a federal recovery zone, which I believe is the greater Yellowstone ecosystem, Montana is prohibited from relocating it, pushing the responsibility back onto federal authorities who can either move it or euthanize it. According to the Independent Record, in support are Montana Fish and Wildlife and Parks, saying it creates a clear process for how state wildlife managers will respond to conflicts. Opponents argue that this just opens up the possibility of more grizzlies being killed due to less cooperation between state and federal authorities. So, and moving on to other things in Montana, this one isn't bear related, but this is about outfitter hunting license allocation and preference point system changes. This one's going to be interesting, I think. It's already been signed too. So House Bill 637 was signed last week. This is in, apparently it's in response to the 30% surge in non-resident applications that we saw in Montana this year. So it basically is going to allow certain non-resident hunters that put in for the draw that did not get drawn. It's going to give them an opportunity to buy an over-the-counter license. And it also is going to allow not outfitted non-residents to purchase an OTC license. I should have, let me clarify on that. So outfitted non-residents. So if you were a non-resident that was going to go with an outfitter and you did not get drawn, you may be eligible to purchase an over-the-counter license and an additional preference point. The preference point was not really clear to me, but the over-the-counter license portion was, I guess. The article says that the uptick has harmed outfitters by creating uncertainty with how many outfitted non-residents may draw licenses in a particular year. The number of outfitted hunters successful in the draw has been down by about 40% over the last few years. However, part of the issue with the last minute amendment was the lack of public comment period. I didn't hear anything about this before now, and how the bill seems to favor non-residents who are able to hire outfitters versus those who cannot. I understand that. This will be a one-time emergency allocation of 3,000 non-resident tags. So hopefully that made sense. Basically, if you were going to go with an outfitter in Montana and you did not get drawn, you may be eligible to buy an over-the-counter license to go ahead and go with that. Looks like it's capped at 3,000. So if you were a non-resident and you wanted to do that, you might be eligible for the one-time emergency tag allocation. You need to already have booked and or made a deposit with an outfitter before April 1st. The additional OTC licenses must be purchased by August 30th. So basically what that's doing is Montana's trying to help their outfitters out a little bit. This isn't exactly similar, but you know, Wyoming basically is doing the same thing with making it non-residents can only go into wilderness areas if they have a licensed guide or there with a licensed resident. So it's kind of the same thing. They're just trying to look out for, you know, outfitter revenue, basically, which I understand the disappointment towards it. But I also understand, you know, being an outfitter and helping out. So that's what's going on in Montana. If you're wondering about that, again, there's an article on Go Hunt. So, okay, moving on to some important dates that are coming right up. Tomorrow is the Washington All Species deadline, which is the 26th of May. Then on June 1st, the Wyoming resident elk application deadline, and then resident and non-resident deer antelope application deadline for Wyoming. So June 1st coming right up. Montana antelope, deer, I believe they call these list tags. So the deer B and elk B tags and antelope B tags deadline is June 1st. Okay, now June 2nd, California all species deadline. June 2nd is also the North Dakota deer application deadline. And for all you Nebraskans out there, the resident elk landowner app deadline is June 4th. It's going to be a small pool of our listeners, but I thought I'd throw it out there anyways. And then coming up June 5th is another big one. The Idaho controlled deer, elk, antelope, and fall bear application is June 5th. Cool. So, all right, on to the hot minute. This is going to be another question and answer. I just threw this out on Instagram and gathered these. You can also enter your questions on the Rockside forums under the Rockcast tab under podcast Q&As. And a fun thing here with Onyx now jumping on with us. If your question is read, you're going to be entered to win a membership from our sponsor or from Onyx. So, if you're, and also again, if you're ready to, you know, re-up your membership or looking to purchase one, if you go to onxmaps.com/hunt, and when you go to purchase at checkout, enter code ROCKCAST and you're going to receive 20% off. So, go check that out. So on to the Q&As. This one is from Will_Cutler. Second season Colorado, what's the most important thing to think about before going? This one, I think, is very similar to a lot of hunts. Really have good plans. I mean, know like where you're going to park your vehicle, what ridge you're going to walk up, how to get there. Have camp spots. Of course, unless you've scouted the area and been in there, it's going to be hard to choose or to really know camp spots like from Google Earth. But have some marked anyways of at least options. Have glassing points marked. Have areas where you think deer are going to be marked, or elk. In this case, I'm not sure. He didn't specify. Have those things marked and have like three different areas where those things are marked, so you have some plans. I think planning is everything. And so most important thing to think about before going, I don't know about thinking about, but to have actually like marked and planned, have all that stuff like mapped out as good as you can and stick to those plans. Obviously be a little bit flexible if you're not seeing deer and whatnot, but, or elk, but have definite plans. And that definitely seems to, when things get overwhelming to me in the backcountry, like if I'm not finding animals or whatever, and I don't have a backup plan, then my mind just starts going about 3,000 miles an hour and I'm not like very indecisive of like where to go. So then I just don't go anywhere or I half-ass it or take too much time before I go in or something like that. Have like, I would say three sets of plans where you have like four glassing points, four places where you think deer, elk are going to be the animals. Mark water spots, mark your camping spots, parking spots, anything like that. Have a plan down, and that really goes for any season. But anyway, so hopefully that kind of answered that. Next question is from The Boot Bow Hunting on Instagram, and they say, spike camp, do you pack in more water than bivy style knowing you'll drop. And I think that he means knowing you're going to drop camp and have more of a spike camp situation instead of bivy style hunting, where you're like every morning you're packing up camp and you're moving, and then wherever you land is where you land. I definitely have not done a lot of bivy style hunting. I'm just done it for like a couple days on a sheep hunt. And we, just because we were moving, and we had all of our gear with us every day, it's really hard to pack like 3 days of water, all at once if you're going to pack up and move every day. So for the spike camp style hunts, I do like to try to have 3 days of water in camp, at least to start with. And then on that third day, I can make a plan to drop down and get water, or move to get water or whatever. But at least I have good water for like 2 days or 2.5 days of hunting. But yeah, I mean, with the bivy style, you're just going to have more weight on you all the time. You know, even like the minimal guys, you're still going to have quite a bit of weight on you every day when you're hunting and traveling. So you don't want to have like a ton of water, because that stuff is just straight up heavy. I personally try to plan for like 3 liters of water a day. I think that's a pretty safe deal. A lot of people say 4 liters is a little better. 2 liters is too light for me. I try to hang on that 3 liters. But I think it also depends kind of where you're hunting too. You know, if you have to, yeah, it depends on a lot of things, but for the most part, if you're bivy style hunting, you're moving around enough and probably crossing some water sources enough that you don't have to pack in a whole bunch of water with you. The spike camp thing, what comes to my mind, for like deer hunting is, I'm probably going to be camped pretty damn close to a glassing point, and that's probably going to be pretty high. So I want to take all that water up with me. Whereas, in my mind, the bivy style is more for like elk, and you might not be as high and you might be a little closer to water. So that's just kind of going to depend on where you're at, in that sense. But that's kind of what I think. Spike camp, definitely pack in more water than bivy style. All right, next question from Ethan_Eskew on the Insta. He asked what my number one worry or concern is with my sheep hunt. I think keeping my feet right is definitely going to be the big one. This isn't the kind of hunt where I'm only going to be like 5 miles from my vehicle or less. And with another set of boots or something like that, if I were to get wet, this is kind of going to be a real grinder. And I think I'm going to really pay attention to my feet this summer, and obviously make sure that my boots are going to be right on point, but also just taking care of my feet and things like that. I can be a little, I don't know, stubborn sometimes. So I don't want to, I want to make sure that if I start feeling like I'm getting a hot spot, I stop and I change my socks, or I fix whatever is happening, and don't get too far along to where if we go, you know, 9 days or whatever, that my feet aren't just completely wrecked. So that's the big one that I'm going to be really trying to dial in, is making sure that my foot care game is on point. All right, next one, Derek, from Derek_Abramson. Pretty sure that's how you say that. He says he booked a moose hunt in which game bags would be large enough and strong enough. I am personally a fan of the Argali bags. You can check those out on the Rockslide store, as well as just, I think, Argali.com or ArgaliGear.com. Those bags have been really good. I really like where he has attachment points to hang them up. I got some feedback from some guys that it wasn't on a moose hunt, but they were on a caribou hunt in Alaska, and they had, I think one got a small hole in it, but they were dragging the bags across the ground. But they still hung up fine and didn't like rip out. It just had a hole in it, but it didn't rip out after they hung it up. So that would be my choice for that, is those Argali game bags. All right, next question, just a couple left here. Blakey's 21 on Instagram. Favorite bino harness you have used? So this is kind of a toss-up. I've been using a newer company anyways called T&K Hunting Gear. All U.S. sourced, U.S. made, veteran owned. And I like Tyler a lot. So I've been running his harness, the new fully enclosed harness. I like that one quite a bit. The other option that I would say would be my go-to if T&K wasn't around, and I have one, and just depending on the day I use it, is the marsupial fully enclosed. That thing is pretty damn hard to beat if you put a rangefinder pocket on it, and then they have just like a small zippered pocket that you can put a bunch of stuff in. I like that layout a lot. You know, there's a lot of people still using Alaska Guide Creations. Still a good pack, very durable. My issue with it was it's pretty dang bulky, so kind of strayed away from having like one bino pack that you can put, you know, like 1,000 things in. Instead, I want like a slimmer pack that you actually put your binos in, and then I can put my rangefinder, you know, on the side, or I can put like a radio pocket. I can add that stuff, and it's more like a modular system. You can have that little zippered pocket. You can even add two of them if you want. And it just keeps things, you know, you basically expand like left or right. You expand width-wise instead of expanding out. So they're just less bulky and more comfortable, it seems like. But those are the two that I've been using and really like and would recommend. Last question from Darren Hodgkiss. Hopefully I said that right. Forgive me if I did not. Do you scout bucks and bulls in May? I think May is a tick early, depending on where you're scouting, right? Like if you're more in the low country where they have like a more resident herd of elk or deer, kind of like the desert, things like that, where they just don't, there's not like a big migration corridor, then I think you can do that for sure. But for me around here and in such, June is more so when I'm looking, and a lot of that has to do with Jim Carr and the podcast I did with him last year about scouting super early in the season. And you know, we were talking about deer more so than elk, but those deer still have their summer coats on, so they're red, you know, they're easy to spot from a long ways away. They're just more visible. And Jim was talking about, like, if you want to find deer, like concentrations of deer, if you look in that earlier season, then it at least lets you know like about where they're at. So you can take a large area and you can narrow it down to some spots, where then later on in, you know, July, when they really start getting that horn growth, you can go back in and have areas really narrowed down to find specific deer. So do I scout them in May? I think it kind of depends. Again, like in the lower country, if you have some resident deer herds where it's like not as much snow type of deal, then I think that you can do that, and they're going to be more visible. Their coats are going to be brighter and stand out more as they're getting that summer coat in. But as far as like the mountains and the high country, depending on the year with snow, you know, your snow levels, those deer are going to like follow the snow line up, as that green grass starts to grow and it gets cooler up there. It's not so hot down. It's not so hot up there. It's hotter down in the low country. Then you're looking at, it just kind of depends on what that snow level, the snow line's going to do. But Jim always talks about later in June. So if you go check that podcast out I did with him last year, he'll explain all that and his reasoning. He also wrote an article on Rockslide as well. So go check that out. On to an Onyx tip of the week. I'm getting better at organizing, but my Onyx looks like a sea of red X pins or pins. And one cool thing that you can do is color code them, and you can put emblems on them too. So I've been trying to do both. I've seen another person that I'm really close with labels theirs, you know, with like the emblems of like glassing or camping or whatever. But she color codes them to like if she's been there or not, or if it's just an idea, or if she actually saw, you know, an animal there, or if she still needs to like go check that area out, if it looks like a good area. So that's an interesting way to do it. So far, mine have just been like my, I'm trying to change things in the process right now. My glassing points, I mark in black. I think my elk, I mark in blue. The deer, I mark in red. No, the deer, I mark in orange or something like that. But I just kind of have a color system just to keep things sorted, basically, or organized a little bit better. And I think that that works really good. So especially if you're sharing pins with people, that could help them as well. So instead of a sea of red X's, you should try to tidy yours up a little bit. That's what I'm doing with mine. So just a little tip there from Onyx. The workout of the week from Montana or from Mountain Tough is, this is just a simple superset circuit. Last week I did a super complicated one that you just cannot really explain. But this is just a super simple circuit. So 20 weighted step ups, 10 dumbbell squat cleans, 10 bent over rows, and 5 burpees. That's one, you know, that's just one circuit there. And you can keep going back and doing that really as many times as you can. You can throw a time on it. So you can do like, you know, I don't know, 20 minutes and see how many times you can do that circuit, time deal, or you can just simply set like a number that you want to do and complete that. But anyways, that basically concludes our Tipsy Tuesday. But if you want to keep throwing in question and answers every other Tuesday, for Tipsy Tuesday, I'm going to do the Q&As. And if you enter your question in and it gets read, then you're going to be entered in to win a membership from Onyx Hunt Maps. So be sure to get on Instagram or get a hold of me somehow. And jordan@rockslide.com if you want to enter it through email. However, get a hold of me with those questions and I'll try to get them read. So I hope everybody has a great Memorial Day and safe Memorial Day that's coming up. And yeah, we will catch you guys on the next one.